This episode is brought to you by Single to Shadi.
Oh God, one more podcast? Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Desi Standard Time. What's going on everybody? My name is Maz Ali, and I'm as usual, per usual, joined by my splendiferous buddy, wonderful chap,
Maz Khan. You know, we're here at your service, baby. Woo!
Hey.
Man, we don't plan these outfits. We just come out here looking weird as hell. what would you describe yourself as right now, my friend?
Okay, here's the thing. So I haven't gotten a haircut in a long time, man. I'm sick and tired of making my hair. I just thought this bandana, it's very fitting for the episode we're about to dive into. It would be perfect, and it's because of my laziness, so I don't have to make it. But I'm getting very Zayd Khan, Mehuna vibes. I don't know. What about you? What do you think?
I'm kind of thinking. I'm not gonna give you that much credit. I'm thinking more like Uday Chopra, Mohabbate vibes. I hate to do it to you, but that's what it looks like. So. You know, I just want a quick aside for all of our listeners who have been following us from season one. You know, Maz Ali, we've talked about this. Maz Ali lives in California. I live in New York. Right now I'm actually in Atlanta. We're all being quarantined. You know, we're all in quarantine right now because of COVID. And for so long, you know, we never thought to actually FaceTime each other or just look at each other when we're recording. So, you know, we record remotely. We talk on the phone as we do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to give away all our secrets, but... Man, this is a game changer, being able to look at each other and really comment on each other's appearances.
Yeah, it's like we're sitting in front of me again, and we're stupid. We didn't think of doing this until so late in the game.
We're living in 2014, man. People are already living in like 2050, and we're over here in 2014. Ridiculous.
Terrible.
But we've wisened up. We've learned the ways of the masters, and we just keep getting better, man. We just keep getting better.
I love it. But I'm not going to let you get off that easy. You got to explain what's going on with your jacket. Hold on. Please.
It's actually a Wed in Rome type theme jacket. And if I stand up and I put it on and zip it up.
And zip up your pants. Wow. Okay. Oh, I thought you were zipping up your fly.
Zip it all the way up. You get like a famous building in Rome. Yeah, man. This is all the rage. This is what Drake wears in his house, man. I'm COVID chilling. All right. I'm COVID chilling. No, actually, to be honest, I saw a YouTube video where James Harden was like rocking something like this. And I was like, yo, I could totally rock that. So I bought it. And I think I'm rocking it. But, you know, it could be cooler. I think you'd look pretty good in it.
I think you're doing it.
We do the trading one time and we check it out.
You got to. So here's the thing. Whenever I'm out shopping with my friends with outfits and stuff, they're always like, yo, man, can I pull this jacket off? And the fact that they asked me that, I'm like, no, you can't. Like, you shouldn't have to ask. You should just
You gotta be
it.
So sure. You gotta be God. So sure. Like, James Harden ain't got shit on me. I got this.
Exactly. Yeah. So, as I was talking about earlier, I thought this bandana, this purple jacket that I got from God knows where, is a perfect homage to the episode we're going to be talking about. So to dive into that, Maz Khan, we're going to spend this episode talking about Pakistani rock. Pakistani rock. Oh, man. I know.
One of my favorite episodes.
This is a big part of you, Maz Khan.
Absolutely.
And so in order to maintain your excitement, I think I will do the quick intro and to put you in place. Let me just dive right into it. So, Pakistani rock, again, I think it's one of the bigger successes of Pakistan in the last 30 years. And the story of how Pakistani rock came to be is a pretty remarkable one. And also one that, you know, you look at how music influences come out from other parts of the world, and it's not all too different. So to dive into it, in 1977 in Pakistan, Zia-ul Huq, who was an army general, took over, became president and started his regime. And he essentially, you know, and feel free to chime in whenever you want, Maz Khan, but he declared martial law. And to simplify it, his main focus, as a lot of historical books may mention, was to Islamify Pakistan. Now, with him doing that, his biggest parts, and for the most part, that definition was to pretty much outlaw any sort of Western influences. So a few examples. One I find kind of hysterical. No more wearing of blue jeans. No more wearing of blue jeans. Because there's nothing more American than Wrangler jeans and Brett Favre ads. So please, everybody, stay the hell away from that.
Of course.
And amongst other things as well, but one of those big things was also rock and roll music.
Right. I think it's so funny. I think it's so fitting that, like, a Desi dad took over Pakistan, right? That's the best way to describe it. Like, he walked in, he was like, what are you wearing? It's out the door. And, you know, for those who aren't, you know, like kind of aware of this culture aspect of ours, but, you know, if a lot of us are first culture or first generation American kids. So our parents grew up in this very conservative kind of Islamified background. If you're from Pakistan or even if you're Muslim from India or Bangladesh, and, you know, the dads in our culture are extremely, extremely strict for the most part. You know, some of us are lucky enough to have understanding dads. I'm definitely, you know, one of the ones that has a strict conservative dad who's just like, those jeans are too tight. You take them off. I'm like,
take them off.
But I'm a guy. He's like, I don't care. Disgrace upon the family. So that's exactly what's going on in Pakistan. You know, Islam is it's a much more modest religion in terms of, you know, its practices and its teachings of, you know, how you enjoy yourself and whatnot. You know, drinking and drugs and all these things are strictly forbidden. But even beyond that, there's a lot of things that, you know, can be deemed as distractions. And the most conservative readings, now Islam doesn't outright say, you know, you can't do these things. It's the most conservative readings of Islam that lead to these kinds of rules being instated. And you saw this all over the region. You saw, you know, Iran kind of undergo this exact same transformation. Kuwait underwent the same kind of transformation. And now, you know, and we'll get to where we are at now, but what's the thing that happens, Mazali, whenever a nation, you know, or whenever a household, whenever a character comes in and says, you can't do this, what's the first thing everyone wants to do?
Do it.
Exactly.
Like Nike, so, baby, just do it.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting in class and my teacher specifically says, you cannot cheat on this test, it doesn't even matter if I was planning on not cheating. Because she said that, I'm going to cheat now. And right. I don't care. I might even know the answers to the test really, really well. It does not matter. Because you told me, because you challenged me now, because you messed with me, right? I'm going to cheat now. I'm going to go out of my way. And all the ways I cannot cheat, I'm going to go and find a new way to cheat and stick it to you.
Right. But don't tell me what to do. Happens.
Yeah.
You don't tell me what to do. You're asking for it. You're dying for it.
Oh, I like that. I like that. But yeah, I mean, typically with a lot of these countries and these types of regimes, when there's really, really strict laws that are sprawled across the land, this is typically what happens. There was an uprising with the people. And in this specific instance with Pakistan, this uprising happened very artistically and actually in a beautiful way. But you see this a lot even so in other cultures, right? There's always Main Street music. And then there's also underground music, right? So there's, for example, there's mainstream hip hop, and then we have conscience rap, and then you remember Lupe Fiasco? Because Lupe was mainly. Sorry, I didn't mean to insult your intelligence like that, but Lupe. So Lupe was mainly an underground OG. Everybody's like, oh, he's like the last of a kind, etc. And then he came out with Lasers, and everyone's like, oh, now he's too mainstream. Right. But this is what typically happens, right? And so during the height of Ziaul Huq's regime, the biggest rock acts at the time from the US and the UK were, you know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Dark Purple, Van Halen. And this is what these were the catalysts to what Pakistan was about to see in the, the coming years.
That kind of rebellious culture already existed in other parts of the world. They were rebelling against other things, right? Maybe society as a whole, the big bad machine, whatever it may be. You know, this is where the Incubus and the Nirvanas and all these also came about in the kind of like the early 90s. And this, you know, the late 80s is also where U2 was just huge in the UK. So you see these bands and they're already, you know, there's a huge influence on the global stage. And these are rebellious bands by nature, right? These are bands that they weren't, you know, they were bad boys, so to speak, of their particular eras. And, you know, the Pakistani, you know, young people who were kind of coming up in the late 80s and early 90s, they looked to these guys as inspiration because they were, you know, under a regime that was very similar in the sense that they were being put down and they were being silenced and censored. And they felt like the best way to kind of rebel against that is to create music and display some of their angst and their rebellious nature through the lovely art of song. So that's really where these Pakistani rock bands first started, and it led to kind of a long tradition and line of these to where we are today.
Yeah, definitely. So let's dive into it, because I know you're a huge Pakistani rock fan. I am too, but I think this is definitely something that's you've been looking forward to talk about. So I'm definitely gonna throw the ball in your court. So let's mention some of these bands, right? There's Junoon that comes to mind. There's Vital Signs as well. Tell us a little bit more about Junoon, MK. Educate us, please.
So I'll start with Vital Signs, and then I'll get into Junoon, because I think Junoon is kind of a very eclectic experience, and they're one of a kind, right? Mm-hmm. Vital Signs is probably the one that we can all say thank you to. They're the first ones, I think, to really come onto the stage and do a really good job of encapsulating that 80s angst in Pakistan, and how the teenagers of that time kind of felt, because Pakistan was, you know, it's a new country. It had just been established, you know, just 40 years or 30 years or sorry, 20 years prior at that point. Right. And then from there, you know, you have the first generation that's not under British rule, that is independent, that creates its own Pakistani identity. And Vital Signs came in, and, you know, most people will know their most famous song, which is Dil, Dil, Pakistan, Ja, Ja, Pakistan, Dil, Dil. So, you know, it's a very patriotic tone that they took up, and they're probably the first ones to really make it big and popularize this segment of the music category, which is Pakistani rock. So once they've established, like, okay, we're bringing in real instruments, it's not going to be poppy, you know, some guy just singing, because there is always the Fakirs and the Abrar ul Haq and the other, you know, even Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan at this time was starting to gain popularity had already become popular. So there's people who are artists, but there hasn't been like a band that was just recognizable playing their instruments and bringing that kind of like music video format to Pakistan. So, you know, you have Vital Signs in 1986. They're just two university students, and they become, I think, the first influence in this. And, you know, it's such a great name, Vital Signs. I think that's such an awesome name for a band. I think it's great. Yeah. But then that kind of paved the way. We'll talk about some of the bands I think they directly influenced later. But then we see the other aspect of it, and we talk about it in our Qawwali episode. But Sufi music is a big part of Pakistan's heritage, right? And you've got this guy who I like to think is a little bit of a he kind of looks like me. You know, we've kind of got the same kind of look going, mainly because we don't have to worry about haircuts like you do. But Ali Azmat, you know, and his crew, they put together this band called Junoon, and it becomes like this international phenomenon. And their style is so unique. It's something that I think very few people had ever seen before or heard before. And they basically mix Sufi music. So they have a very Sufi kind of flair to it. You know, there's this spiritual and very like Qawwal type of atmosphere to the music that they're bringing. And they're mixing it in with rap music and rap instruments. So you see this kind of like eclectic mix that no one has done before. And through that, they gain international fame. I mean, these guys have been called the U2 of Pakistan. Junoon has gone on to become one of the biggest bands of all time. So, yeah, I think these two bands really set the stage for Pakistani rock in the late 80s. Vital Signs was 86. Junoon was 1990. And it's crazy because, you know, these bands are still around today. And we'll talk about how much of an influence they've had on even things that are going on today. We talk about it in other episodes. But, you know, Ali Azmat is still a very, you know, household name in the music world. And Junoon is definitely one of those bands that everyone kind of knows about and wants to see live and stuff like that, because they're just awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, Junaid Jamshed, right? He came from Vital Signs. So he started everybody knows, I think if you're Pakistani, you have for sure have had to have owned at least one Junaid Jamshed Kurta in your life. Right. And this is the guy. He came from Vital Signs. He went on to become this international phenomenon, really.
Right.
Because he obviously started with a lot of the rock songs, and then he transitioned and, you know, found God and Tawheed and became a little more religious in his life. And then he started transitioning to more Naats and Nasheeds, right? It's typically stuff that's the types of music that were more popular and regulated in Pakistan before Pakistani rock really took off, right? So, right. Yeah, it's truly incredible. But I think for me, really, I think it was around 2003, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's when I really started being exposed to Pakistani rock around that time. Now, was Pakistani rock was, because it wasn't really in my house. My household was mostly Qawwalis and a lot of the old school stuff. So was it like, was your dad a lot more into it as well, MK? Or, you know, how did it come about for you?
You know, my story is a little bit more different. I wasn't really exposed to it through parents, really. But more so just through experience. And, you know, a lot of it was being able to visit Pakistan as kind of a high schooler. And I had heard Strings before. I think the World Cup, they had a song that they put out for Pakistan back in, like, whichever World Cup it was that we played India. And India went on to win it all. But, you know, the patriotism was at an all-time high. And so Strings was kind of my first intro into the Pakistani rock band world. I'd heard my uncles, they moved to the U.S. much, much later than my family did. And so when they came, I was still, you know, kind of a young kid, and they brought along these CDs and whatnot. And I kind of put them to the side. I didn't really listen to them. I'd heard them listening to Junoon here and there, but it wasn't anything crazy to me at the time. I was still young, and I think that music kind of goes over your head a little bit. You're not angsty yet. It doesn't identify with you.
It doesn't call you yet.
Yeah. It doesn't. It's not calling you by your name just yet. And I went to Pakistan in high school for a summer and ended up, you know, spending a lot of time with family and listening to a lot of the local music. And, you know, thankfully, my parents have blessed me with the gift of being able to speak Urdu fluently. So, you know, I would venture out and just kind of hang out in the bazaars and, you know, the roadside stuff and just hang out with whoever, you know, have chai with whoever you want, because that's the thing in Pakistan. Like, you go out to the side of the street, you have yourself a cup of chai, especially in Karachi. They drink chai like 8 times a day. Like, I don't know what's in this chai. It might be crack because they're addicted to it. Like, they drink chai every chance they get. Anyone that comes and talks to you, you pour them a cup of chai. So, you know, I'd go and just sip chai with these guys who are, you know, doing their businesses. They have these roadside stands. And they'd be listening to, you know, the Junoon or the Vital Signs or the Abralahaks or the Nuri or the, you know, whatever. And that's really what exposed me to it. So let's take a quick break. We'll dive back into some of these other bands that I've mentioned. As you can tell, I'm like all about this stuff.
We'll definitely dive into that. But like Maskan said, let's take a quick break and let's hear from this week's South Asian Spotlight. And we'll dive back into the goodies right after this.
We've all watched or heard of Indian matchmaking. And today, we have a special treat for you. No, it's not Simanti. But it is someone truly worth hearing from. Radha Patel, the founder of Single to Shadi. Radha, welcome.
Thanks, Maz. Radha Auntie has a ring to it too, right?
Yeah, no, it for sure does. I would say it has more of a ring to it than Simanti, but that's just me. But you have a new approach to being a quote Rishtanti, so tell us a little bit more.
Sure. We've seen the evolution of dating go from in-person to digital, and along the way I kept hearing how much time was wasted scrolling versus actually dating. At the same time, most of the people I spoke with weren't just using dating apps. They were simultaneously accepting bio data from family members.
Okay. So yeah, then why not offer something that gives them the best of both worlds, right?
Exactly. So in other words, matchmaking.
Hey.
Yeah, I founded Single to Shadi to give the flexibility of dating on your own terms while having some sort of level 1 clearance, aka me, your modern Rishta auntie. someone who understands there's more to marriage than what's on paper, and I'm going to help you find it.
Love it. So you heard it right here, folks. Our generation's own modern Rishtanti. To see if Single to Shadi is right for you, you can sign up for free and hear back from Radha at singletoshadi.com. Single2SHAADI.com. Thanks, Radha.
Thanks, Moz.
All right, everyone. Welcome back. We are talking about Pakistani Rock today. Before the break, I was going on my one of many soapbox speeches about how I grew up, you know, kind of not really being exposed to Pakistani rock, but then getting a chance to see it as part of the culture in Pakistan when I went to visit in high school. And that love just really blossomed. You know, I think that I was a huge indie and alternative rock fan growing up. You know, bands like Dave Matthews and Coldplay were really what was it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but you know,
embarrassing, MK. Come on.
Yeah. You know how I know you're gay. I loved those kinds of bands and that kind of music growing up. And so when I saw someone who looked like me singing it, I was like, man, this is incredible. I have to learn more about this. And you know, the Junoon is just such a crazy sound. I didn't identify with it that much, but then along came this band in 1988 is when they really started, called Strings. And I think that was my first real like love, and still is my favorite band, the band that I listen to the most. They're just so good. And it identified with me so well in terms of the type of music that they made. The lyrics were easy to understand for someone who is fluent, but not maybe like as poetically, you know, like knowledgeable, like, you know, when people be out here in like Shairi and stuff like that, like which is like Islamic poetry, Muslim poetry, Urdu poetry, they'll say these things, and I'm just like, I don't know any one of those words. What did they just say?
People are losing their minds,
right? It's crazy. And then my mom's in the background like, oh, yeah, bate. And I'm like, what does he even say? I don't
never see my mom smile as much as I do when she's listening to Shairi. And then she just looks around and she almost looks at me disappointed. I'm like, it's not my fault. I didn't know no Shairi and some really, really poetic Urdu.
Right.
My bad,
Mom. And we're gonna have a whole episode just on that. But man, I mean, it's Strings was just that first band that really brought me into the Pakistani rock scene. And really introduced me to the idea that it's not just Americans and Brits who are making this kind of music. This really is an art form that other people have taken on across the world. And I'm just lucky enough to be Pakistani and having someone who's Pakistani doing it so that I could follow along. And so Strings, you know, they became a huge phenomenon. They've now appeared in like Bollywood and they've gone on to even direct, I think, the most successful seasons of one of the shows that we talk about, you know, in the later episode, Coke Studio. I don't know, Mosley, have you really heard a lot of String stuff or?
Yeah, no. For me, I think the journey for me, and I think you mentioned it really, really well, that it's cool to listen to someone who speaks your language, someone who looks like you in like a rock and roll medium. I think we collectively sort of had that revelation recently with the likes of Gully Boy, right? But only it wasn't rock and roll, it was hip hop. So I was like, oh my God, this is pretty dope. And there's actually a huge underground hip hop scene in Bombay, and it touches upon that. And it really exposes you to this music. So similar to me. So for me, my background, I'm the youngest of three, as I mentioned that maybe 9,000 times. My brother was into hip hop. He was the hip hop head of the siblings. And my sister was into rock, alternative, grunge, you know, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, all the likes of that. So I got a good little taste of a little bit of both, right? Bone Thugs and Harmony, Nas, Tupac, Tribe Called Quest, Fugees. I had that. Then I had Nirvana, Lenny Kravitz, Garbage, amongst others. So for me, I just grew up listening to this music, but then I had this really angsty phase around 15, which is around the time I went to Pakistan. In August 2003. And so what happened was my angst, the way I was able to portray that to the world was I had a full on head of hair. I had a full afro. I was in the most awkward. I'll challenge anybody out there. I had the most awkward phase maybe ever. I'm very proud of it. And I was the talk of the town in the entire country of Pakistan. There, have you seen the one with the long hair? Everybody always said that. And you mentioned how you went out in Pakistan. You were hanging out inside the streets, chilling with everybody, having some chai, drinking some lassis. When we were there visiting, my dad was very protective. He was like, you're not going to go out there on your own. You're going to go be accompanied by your cousin and stuff, right? Because fortunately, there's a little bit of crime that, you know, takes place in Pakistan.
A lot of people. I should preface that. I'm not a badass. Like, I was definitely with family. I was just frequenting their frequent spots. You know, it's not like I was going out exploring Karachi on my own. That's a quick way to get shot, you know? Unfortunately, so, back then. It's better now, but, you know, back then.
Yeah, so there's always that. You're a young boy, so be aware. They're out to get you. And
not boy. Why?
Why? Young boy. So driving around, driving around in my cousin's Corolla, Mansoor Pai, he introduced me to Jal, to Adab Aslam, to Strings, a lot of these guys. And I think no one had heard a voice like Adab Aslam's
right
up until that point. And so Adab Aslam, I think, is what really drew me in. Because I heard of Pakistani Rock, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because there's, you know, unfortunately, if you are a first generation in the States, then you have to deal with this whole identity crisis. You're like, for lack of better terms, and my apologies to people out there, but we would label it as like, oh, that's like kind of fobby music, right? So that's kind of what I was struggling with, right? So I was just like, no, I don't want to get this. Yeah, you fob, dude. Like, chill out. We have a bunch of burgers out here, though, but and then you get into it later. You start appreciating, like, dude, why am I afraid? And so Adab Aslam, and that's when I started really getting into Pakistani rock, is around that phase of my life. And Adab, man, there's nobody like him.
Yeah, I think that, you know, so I love that segue. Let's talk about that. So Strings, you know, went to Bollywood, and they kind of followed the footsteps of both Junoon and Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan in that regard. But they were featured in this movie Zinda with Sanjay Dutt. They wrote the song Zinda Hu. And they also had a song that was featured on the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack, Na Jaane Kyun. So they achieved this kind of international fame. And I think that they're, you know, them and Junoon really paved the way for, like Vital Signs started it. Like, okay, you can be a band, like a true band, and you know, make it big in Pakistan. Then Junoon and Strings really paved the way for other people to kind of go out and spread this joy to the world. And then you have Jal coming in much later, around 2002. This guy named Atif Aslam shows up. And we talked about this in our Bollywood season 1. And I mentioned that Atif Aslam is not a good singer. Like, he's not classically trained. He's not a good singer. And I got a lot of blowback from that. You know, a lot of people were like, yo, I listened to this episode and you said this one thing that kind of bothered me. And I was like, first of all, I don't know anyone cared this much.
I'm looking at you kind of sideways myself, bro.
Right.
I'm kind of like,
and here's the thing.
What you trying to say?
Those same people had no idea where Atif Aslam was from. They had no idea that Adat and Vo Lamhe were these songs that were huge in Pakistan from this band Jal. That we had all heard. We heard him raw before he was kind of mixed in, and now he's phenomenal. Now you listen to like the Coke Studio stuff, and this guy can like do it with the best of them. But it took years, because he wasn't classically trained. This guy was a college kid, 17 years old, probably got his heart broken, or his, like, the girl, his neighbor that he loved got
someone
married off
messed
to someone.
With him bad.
Someone messed with him. Someone
to give him those kind of vocals.
He got the Adele treatment. And he basically was like, I'm gonna sing my heart out. And he had these songs that were, if you think the Bollywood versions of Adat and Vo Lamhe Vo Bate are like, which is what like really made him famous in Bollywood, if you think those songs are like really sad or whatever, listen to the originals by Jal, and I think you will find there's a lot less kind of going on. There's a lot less like crazy like editing being done, production being done. It's just his voice and then a few like acoustic kind of instruments in the background. And it's amazing. If you like Atif Aslam, this is how he should have been listened to.
My guy.
It's incredible.
Atif is now a tamed creature.
Yeah.
Prior to that, he was a wild beast, a wild behemoth, just raw talent coming out. And that's what you're alluding to. If you want to hear Atif in his rawest form, go check out his songs, you know, with Junoon, with Jal, in the mid 2000s, Adat was the song that just blew everyone's mind. And to see him live is also one thing. We saw him in Oracle Arena in 2008. And I'll never forget, this guy is a rock star. This is still before he really tapped into Bollywood. He was on the verge of doing that. So he was still a little bit like, I'm Atif, I'm a wild animal, I can do whatever I want, right? I'll never forget, he comes out with sunglasses on, a scarf, tight yellow scarf. You can't see his neck or anything. He just comes out slowly. People are losing their mind. Aunties are fainting, dupattas thrown in the air, what have you.
And I love the demographic, right? Like now, like Hasan Minhaj comes out on stage and like all these like, you know, adolescent teen brown girls is like, oh my God. But like back in the day when Atif came out on stage, it was auntie, like married women who were just like, oh my God, it's Atif. I'm like, dude, it's so embarrassing.
Myself included.
That's what it was.
People being wheelchaired out, stretched
we were those married women.
I'm saying all this as if I was like too cool to be there. Bro, I was in the front row. I got VIP seats to that concert. It was hilarious. But Atif comes out almost kind of like Prince. Like he came out, he had a microphone stand in front of him, came out just slowly, just grabs it like tenderly from the bottom of the stand and grabs it and goes, Nahila. And everyone just losing their mind. He's singing BD, oh my God. But he had this just presence. And I think people that weren't familiar with them, they were just like, oh, like what's this Fabi concert I'm going to? They saw him performing, they were just like, oh no, I stand corrected. This guy's a rock freaking star.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. And he's only gotten bigger since then. I think it's okay. So I think, you know, just a quick aside between me and you, I think that we've now had a mention of this guy in every episode, not Atif Aslam, but guess who? So the first two songs that were used from Jal in Bollywood were Adat and Wo Lamhe Wo Baatein. What actor do you think they were portrayed on?
Could it be, Maz? Could it be?
Let me give you a hint. Both movies included gratuitous makeout sessions. Imran Hashmi, man. This dude is everywhere. I don't understand. So I think honestly, from now on, if you're a listener, just keep this in mind. From now on, I'm making it a thing. We're going to mention Imran. We're going to tie every episode we do to Imran Hashmi. And the sad thing is we won't even have to try. Because this is the kind of shit, like, he's embedded everywhere. He's everywhere. Everywhere you look, his tongue just makes an appearance. Like, Adat came in this movie, Kalyug, starring Imran Hashmi. And then Wo Lamhe Wo Baatein came in, what was the movie? Zaher, also including Imran Hashmi. So, this guy, everywhere.
And you mentioned, you just reminded me, because anytime I didn't know what Atif Aslam looked like, and I thought he was like another one of these, Udit Narayan, Son Nigam type of looking folks. I didn't know he was a really actually good looking dude, and I kept associating this poor guy's face with Imran Hashmi's. And anytime I heard an Atif song, I just thought Imran Hashmi's singing this,
right? Unfortunately,
and one day I just realized that the Google images can solve all my problems, so I Googled it and I was like, okay.
If only there was a magical device where you could look up answers to questions that you have. Oh, wait, it's 2020. You can't.
Hey, back then I was living in 99 in 2008, all right? So
True.
I didn't know these things, man. I did not know
these things.
Imran Hashmi. Imran Hashmi body count. Why not?
Unbelievable. I can't believe this guy makes it into everything we try. Trust us, guys. I mean, I think everyone who listens to us knows that we hate this guy. He's literally ruined our lives in more ways than one. And he's ruined, you know, the sanctity of the Bollywood, like, genre by himself, almost.
Yeah. We try to keep it a quaint and classy podcast for your listenership. And we apologize that Imran Hashmi comes up all the time. Well, I feel weird admitting this, but I was looking up his songs the other day, and I finally saw one of his makeout scenes. I don't know where. It's disgusting. It's like not
it's
hot.
Disgusting. It's not. Just, it's like it's. That's the thing. It's like if you're gonna make out in a movie, at least learn to make out, and they just never have. It's unbelievable. Anyways, we digress.
Sorry,
we digress. back to Atif. He broke into Bollywood like no one, I think, really before him. And he paved the way for people that we talked about in our crossover episode, you know, the Ali Zuffers of the world, that really kind of came in. And I think that there's this new kind of standard. You know, even our boy Fawad Khan was in a band, which, you know what? I need to look up the name because it's something so crazy. Entity Paradigm.
Entity Paradigm, yes.
Yeah, it's such a great name.
How do you come up with that name?
I have no idea. Entity Paradigm. And, you know, and he also kind of used that as a transition to, you know, making his way into Bollywood. So,
yeah,
definitely, I think Atif is the crown jewel of the Bollywood, you know, music crossover from Pakistan. But it pains me that so many people think that, like, some guy named Mahesh Bhatt found this talent and put him on screen with Imran Hashmi's face mouthing the same words. Nah, man, this guy grew up in Pakistan, had his heart broken by some Pakistani ladki. And if you're Pakistani, you know exactly what that feels like because it happens to everyone at least once.
Sanji.
And he's sung about it since then. So, and that's our boy.
That's our boy, man. Yeah, we always like to make these juxtapositions between Pakistani artists as well as Bollywood artists. I feel as though in Bollywood, there's more so of a, okay, you're an actor, and then the next thing you're good at, by default, almost at times, is dancing, right?
Right. Obviously, not in Pakistan.
So singing is obviously huge and it's its own thing in India. But I feel as though you act and you sing in Pakistan. Those are like the two double-edged swords that you have. And so it's interesting to kind of see these differences as... And again, this is kind of a little bit of a result of that Islamification, right? Of that one of those things that I think lasted for a long time in Pakistan. No, let's not dance. Let's kind of keep it, you know, respectable.
Singing songs is much more acceptable than dancing a dance. What are you, a girl? You know, that's like kind of the thing that I know their parents.
You're a nortanki, huh?
You're a nortanki.
Yeah.
But, you know, to kind of bring it all around and wrap things up, I think that Pakistani rock bands have been such a big influence. And, you know, I think we cover it in our Coke Studio episode, you know, later on. But one of the things that's crazy about these Pakistani rock bands is not only the influence they've had just on an entire generation in terms of their songs and the music that they've made, but how they continue to affect the musical scene in Pakistan. And, you know, if it isn't clear what I'm talking about, it's because Vital Signs member Rohail Hayat is actually the creator and founder of Coke Studio Pakistan. He's the one who kind of helmed it for the first few years before handing it over to another Pakistani rock band, Strings, who helmed it for several years before they handed it over to another band called Nuri, which was also early on in the late 90s. They kind of, you know, took over for a couple of years before now handing it back to Rohail Hayat. So from beginning to end, Coke Studio, which is now Pakistan's like biggest show, and, you know, we talk about it a ton in our episode that's devoted to it, but it's completely put together by these Pakistani rock bands that, you know, really put Pakistani music on the scene, but are now continuing to provide a platform for these new young artists to showcase their talents as well. So I think that Pakistani rock is so much more important than people even give it credit for.
100%. And, you know, they were the first people that really tied us back into what our parents were listening to, whether it was Qawwalis, whether it was Shairis, whether it was Nasheeds, and the Pakistani pop songs as well, right? And they ended up segueing that and bringing all of that together a little bit in their music, but mostly entirely with Coke Studio. So we'll definitely dive into that later. But to wrap up here, thanks again all for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed our little take on Pakistani rock. Stay tuned. We're going to be adding a lot of our favorite Pakistani rock songs onto our ever-growing playlist known as Desi Standard Tunes. So tune in for that on Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere. Maz Ali, I'm going to sign off here. I'm going to definitely go put this bandana in the laundry. It's kind of sweaty
I'm going to take this jacket off and stop acting like I'm as cool as James Harden. But yeah, man, everyone, this is by far my favorite episode from this season. I'm just, you know, it's something that is so close to me, and I just love Pakistani rock so much. I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing my voice. I'm going to let it go now. But definitely check out these bands if you've never heard them before. We'll all have, you know, select songs from each of them on Daisy Standard Tunes. If we've missed mentioning some or you have some that you'd like to share with us, please, you know, reach out on either Instagram or Twitter and just let us know, you know, at Daisy Standard. Yep. Let us know what you're thinking, and we'd love to engage with you guys. But yeah, this is Maz Khan signing off as well. Everyone be safe out there, and till next time.
Rock on.
All right, guys. Peace. Bye.